Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello everybody, welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast dedicated to rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm JB, live in studio, next to my dear friend Phil.
Hello Jonathan.
And down the line, my exceptional friend Tim Cocker.
Gentlemen, afternoon.
How are you, mate?
Very, very well. I appreciate the commitment on a gorgeous, hot, sunny bank holiday Monday. And where else would we want to be than in a darkened room, absorbing all the heat, getting into a sweaty mess in the TMO shipping container where I am, and in the rugby dungeon where you are.
Well, yeah, you're in a steel container, aren't you, Tim?
Exactly.
Sun beating down on it.
Goodness me. Yep. Goodness me.
I know. Bacon. But it's fine. It's rugby. I want to talk rugby.
Well,
it's a small sacrifice.
But do you know what's keeping Tim cool, both metaphorically and physically?
Go on.
His wonderful Akuma rugby shirt. I believe he's in the elite. I believe you're in the Milano wool one. What kind of wool is it?
That merino wool.
There you go.
Cool, and it keeps you cool in the heat and warm in the winter. It's a wonderful jersey from our club shop.
Hey, exactly. So go onto our Twitter. You'll see it pinned there, and you too can look as cool physically and metaphorically as us.
Well, I am looking particularly cool today.
You are, aren't you?
Because I am in the quintessential summer rugby outfit from Saturday forward.
Yeah.
Which is light chino shorts.
Lovely.
Brown loafers.
Uh-huh.
And a red rugby jersey.
Of course. I've seen this look somewhere else this weekend.
And I'd like to do nothing more than find an enormous, enormous, incredibly talented Polynesian fellow who may or may not be bigoted and is a Christian and express my views to him.
It's essential, it's essential. Now, obviously, there's a bit of scandal from this match, so let's deal with that immediately. I have no problem with loafers and shorts.
Well, it's an interesting... Right, the situation here is, it wasn't a strong look, in my opinion. I mean, I quite like the throwback 2005 Munster jersey.
That's nice. That was nice, actually.
It's a tough one, though, isn't it? Because brown suede loafers with no socks, I don't think looks great. With socks, I think looks worse. And invisible socks that you can buy don't stay on. So what do you do?
Talcum powder, mate. Talcum powder.
A man from experience.
So I actually do have brown suede loafers, and I like to wear them with my chino shorts. But now, I guess that's the uniform of a bigot. So I can't do that. So yeah, that was the big controversy, and I think that'll divide generations of rugby fans as to exactly what the correct garb is.
Let's talk about the game.
One game, some Challenge Cup, and there's some more games.
Okay.
Well, how about just rattle through? There's quite a few stories that have emerged. It's like headlines, nothing we need to talk to in too much depth. But Warren Gatland, according to the Telegraph, is going to be on another Lions tour. He'll be on the tour to South Africa, adding more fuel to the England rumours.
Okay. But England's a bit funny with this, are they not? It's my understanding they don't particularly like their coaches going on Lions tours.
Well, who knows, but
yeah.
That's quite easy to say, isn't it?
Lions is the headline, I guess.
It is quite easy to say that we don't like our coaches going on Lions tour when your coaches have been Martin Johnson, who was never going to go, Brian Ashton, who's never going to go, Stuart Lancaster, who was never going to go,
Andy Robinson,
who's never going to go. It's actually pretty easy to say that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Since Clive Woodward, they've not had a real candidate.
And if that's what it takes to get Gatland, and they want Gatland, and it also means that they get kind of some inside knowledge to how other players play and train and all the rest of it. So
got all the knowledge.
It always seems a benefit to me. He does have some serious, significant inside knowledge to a lot of the players.
What about the Welsh team by taking them to, on the Lions tour?
Nothing. He could learn a few things about the Ireland team.
Yeah, it's true.
And maybe two Scottish players. Finn Russell and Stuart Hogg. He could learn a bit of them.
I'm looking forward to the English version of the Geography 6 when, I don't know...
who are the English Geography 6? What a good question.
What bog standard Premiership player?
Well, Harry Thacker.
Well, we had two in 2013, didn't we? Because Christian Wade at the time and... Was it Billy Twelve Trees?
Tom Court?
Tom Court.
There is another one as well who... Shane Williams?
He was in Japan,
in Japan at the time. There are some others. But yeah, the English players at the moment, I mean, not there's anything wrong with Harry Thacker, he's a great guy, great player, but, that would be a guy who would be in my Geography 6. Second row?
There you go.
I think someone like Beaumont.
Well, no, because it would have to be someone who was playing for England, because that's what happened with the Geography 6, wasn't it? They were playing for Australia, playing for Wales against Australia. So they were nearby.
Playing for Wales.
My head hurts, boys. My head hurts.
Okay, yes, good point.
Sorry for bringing it up. Leicester have confirmed Callum Green is signing and also announced Leinster's Noel Reid and, Jaco Tauta, the South African centre, joining.
Jaco Tauta's a powerful fella. I like that one.
He looked good for Munster a couple of years back.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of where Leicester are now, isn't it? Good for Munster a couple of years back. Bring him in. If they've got Labanini as well, Callum Green's a decent shout. But then they're going to be quite heavy on locks. And who's the other one?
Noel Reid. So Leinster centre, he has a single solitary Ireland cap to his name in 2014.
Yeah, it sounds sufficiently mediocre for Leicester. Well done, lads.
Yeah. Elsewhere, Japan are bracing themselves for unruly fans. But one sort of person that knows rugby over there in Japan has been trying to explain to the police that, well, firstly, they've been saying to all the cities, you need to stock up on beer. No, seriously, I don't think you understand. You need to really stock up on beer.
Nice.
And then the police have been stressed to them that rugby fans may seem scary, but they're not.
I don't like... After my excursion to Prague, I don't want anyone to assume that I'm scary, because consequences... consequences... I mean, I do... Yeah, let's just be behaved, shall we?
Absolutely.
London Irish been promoted. Rory Best is retiring.
Yeah.
Ben Teo leaving Worcester.
What? How will they tell the difference?
Ben Teo, after 33 games in 3 seasons for Worcester, at £300,000.
And the rest.
Per year. Whatever it was.
I guess the only reason that they'll know that he's gone is because their bank balance has slightly increased when the orders have come in. Like, what was this expense? You don't want to know. It's a terrible business decision. You don't want to know.
Yeah, Ben Teo is what you get if you buy players at motorway service stations instead of going to Amazon. he's the Beats by Dre headphones of rugby players.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. But yeah, much like Beats by Dre, he did look nice. He did look nice to have. He was a good accessory.
Very flashy.
Very flashy. Sold some shirts. Good on him. Where do you think that he'll go next?
Don't know.
I thought he might go to Leicester, but...
God, he's got to play. If he goes to Leicester, they'll make him play games. I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere like Japan.
Japan, I know. Loads of cash, hardly any games.
Japan would be good for him. I can't see him being ground to dust in France, can you?
I don't know. It depends how good the money is. Because, don't forget, he played a lot of NRL. And if there's anything more physical than going to France, it's the NRL.
Do you reckon?
It is. Have you ever seen...
No, don't get me wrong. I know that the hits are brutal.
The carries, the number of carries and tackles per game... You'll get players making 40 to 50 tackles and 40 to 50 carries per game.
The thing I would just say about that, about the brutality of rugby league, which is undoubtedly a physical game, is we look at the carries and the tackles, and we look at the carries and tackles because we miss that they don't have any rucking to do.
True.
Do you know, so
how much rucking was Ben Teal doing?
Well, I mean, he will be carrying a lot.
He's no Miles Benjamin for Worcester, JB.
He is no Miles Benjamin for Worcester, may I add, was Premiership top try scorer.
Yeah.
So let's not speak ill of Miles, please.
And probably
I'm complimenting on his rucking, as he's done many times on you.
Listen, JB's very defensive at the moment, Tim.
So no more Benter. I would like to see him go to, I don't know.
I'd like to see him stay in England to
London Irish.
Yeah.
Fine. If hey, London Irish get him.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be a good fit.
And they love wasting cash. It'd be ideal.
They should get Johnny Williams back, though.
Yeah, you're right there. Well, you know, they might get the chance. Oh, God, Johnny Williams.
Johnny Williams and Jonathan Joseph in the centres.
Well, just imagine this, right? So you're Johnny Williams. Now, I'm not saying he's gone for a pay cut, but he went for a pay cut. So he wanted so badly to play Premiership rugby, he probably signed a deal which is below his market value. And if Newcastle go down, he's going to have to probably get out of that deal again.
So if that is the case, I imagine he will have negotiated a relegation release clause. If that was his motivation, he would definitely have a relegation release clause.
That's not even about that, is it? It'll be about, like, if they've gone down, everyone has already planned their squads. I mean, I'm sure someone can open up some salary cap for a player the quality of Johnny Williams, but, you know, it's difficult.
Anyway, Phil just touched on it. If like, you know, you see players going back to their roots, like Callum Green, when the Leicester signing was announced, was like, that's where my career started, in the academy at Leicester. Great to be able to go back. If London Irish could do that as well and get Anthony Watson, Jonathan Joseph, Jamie Gibson, there's tons more. Johnny Williams.
True.
Joe fucking a singer.
Corbusiero,
get him out of retirement.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they should do that.
There's absolutely loads. The golden generation. Nick Rouse.
Yeah, 100%.
Get him out of retirement.
Nick Kennedy.
Out of retirement.
Out of retirement. Back in the game. So let's go with Munster first. Munster Saracens. What are your immediate takeaways from this colossal clash?
Well, it was seriously physical, wasn't it?
It was.
It was. That was never, ever in doubt, the physicality of this game.
Who for you stood out player-wise? Who really impressed you?
I think the...
For me? Oh, sorry, go on, Phil.
Well, I was going to say, the Saracens pack,
yep.
In particular, Mako, Itoje and Billy, not just for the physicality, but some of their decision-making, both with ball in hand, so some of the distribution work that those three, and a couple of others, Titi Lamasetelli did as well, but also for the work at the ruck, which... It was really, really important. So we know Ty Byrne, Peter Omani, CJ Stander and O'Donoghue, the open side for Munster, we knew that they wanted to get on the ball, slow it down, disrupt it, win penalties to get territory and field position. And they got themselves in the position to do that a number of times, were it not for some quick thinking and reactions around the ruck by those players. Now, I would say... There were a couple of times where they probably did this so illegally. They probably came in from the side or slightly off their feet. But the majority of it was very, very good identification from the Saracens players that stopped Munster doing what they wanted to.
Do you know who really impressed me?
Go on.
Really, Chris Farrell.
He is a big, strong boy.
He is a bloody good player. How many Island Caps has he got? It's not many, is it?
A handful.
I mean... I say he's a good player, and then I watched Ringrose the day after. I thought, "Ooh, he's a bloody good player too."
Different types of players, though,
aren't they?
Yeah,
but you know, I was really, really impressed, but just by the quality of his defence, just physical. I like him a lot, actually.
Five Island Caps.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Wow, he's playing for the wrong nation.
Tim, who impressed you?
Ben Spencer.
Oh, yeah, agreed. Very, very
I really think, and I'm not being reactive on this. I like Ben Spencer a lot. I think he's got a really balanced game. But having been in that Saracen side for the last 5-6 years, he's developed that sort of territorial tactical nous, but he's still got that little spark and threat around the base. But his pass is so clean. Really, really like him. I think I would take him as my third scrum half to the World Cup.
It was interesting as well.
He's definitely pushing that spot.
I agree with you. I thought he played very well. And it was interesting, a bit of analysis that Austin Healey did during the game, which was the multiple forward runners. So this led to the Michael Rhodes try. But there was multiple occasions where Saracens had multiple, two or three forward runners, all running slightly different lines one or two defenders, and trusting Ben Spencer to pick out the right one. And one time where it worked perfectly was the Michael Rhodes try.
Yeah, completely agree.
100%.
The thing which Ben Spencer sort of raises more questions than answers in a lot of ways. Because when I look at Spencer, I've always thought he hasn't quite stepped up to the mark. And now I'm starting to think maybe he didn't step up to the mark because he wasn't quite ready for it. But by sticking with him, and also by him signing a new deal, what was it, 2 years ago that he signed a new deal? When I think a lot of lads would have said, time to go somewhere else, get some game time. If I go away and back myself, I might get an England spot, so on and so forth. It just shows the value of staying in a system, staying in a good environment, and biding your time.
And it did help. So if it was 2 years ago that he signed the new deal, Richard Wigglesworth would have been, he's just about to turn 36, so he would have been 33, 34. So he would have known that Wigglesworth is someone that he can learn from, but also push and be superseding within a couple of years. So it was a mature decision by Spencer.
Yeah, I think that takes quite a lot, actually, because I assume he could get better money elsewhere, whether he could get better business opportunities, who knows? But he probably could get better, clean money elsewhere. Jokes. It's just a good decision and, quite a nice little story, actually.
Spence 9 Investments Limited.
Bring
it on.
That's the one.
Now, did you have any issue with Billy Vunipola being named man of the match?
Well, no, because he was the best man on the field.
Yeah, same. I've no issue with him. You're not selecting him for anything he's said or done. You are selecting him for performance.
And but what does it say, Phil? What does it say? He's a role model.
I agree, JB, and well done for chucking another log on the burning fire of injustice.
Exactly. Are Saracens our favourites for the European Cup?
I was thinking about this after the Leinster game. So of the two performances, I think Saracens was marginally more impressive. I don't think they're favourites because... So there is some water to go under the bridge between now and the final. There's obviously league games which are, important for both teams, but arguably more important for Saracens. And then the playoffs. So I don't necessarily think that the team that played today for yesterday for Saracens will be the same team that starts the final. So I think things will change.
Yeah, I tend to think that Saracens are in a better position. I know it's not trendy to say that playing rugby is good for you anymore, but I do think it is. I think steel sharpens steel. And going into that game, I think Leinster will have rotated and rested and played against inferior teams who are also resting and rotating. And I think it has an impact on them. I think it had an impact on the Irish team in Six Nations. I think the competitiveness of Saracens going into it actually bodes well for them. I just wonder if when they're at full strength and when Leinster are at full strength, I think Leinster might just be a little bit more complete. I think their scrimmaging is slightly better. I just think they've probably got 5 or 10% up on Saracens across the board.
Tim? I can't wait for this final. I cannot wait for the final. It's just mouthwatering, isn't it? Huge. Will it be 5 stars for Leinster? Will it be Saracens clawing one closer? It's the two best teams in Europe. Yeah, got to the final. It's great.
Yeah, and that is. So this is not everyone's dream final. If you supported some of the other teams who have got through to the knockout stage of the competitions. Or even the pool stage of the competitions, you probably didn't want this specific final. But for anyone who is a neutral or a neutral in this competition, or even didn't have anyone in the quarterfinals or semifinals, this is the best. This is the best final because these have been comfortably the best two teams. The only team that has beaten either of these teams was Toulouse, who beat Leinster at home early in France earlier in the season. And other than that, they've both looked pretty comfortable.
Do you think these two teams are exciting?
I think they have very exciting moments.
Tim?
I do. I think they are. I think that Saracens are always much maligned, but they've really added to their game since like 2013, 2014, when they were getting to finals and first winning. They've really come on a lot, and they are clinical. They get a sniff and they finish in a way that, I mean, Toulouse had a couple of moments and they couldn't deliver. Saracens take their chances.
Yeah, they're sort of exciting in the same way a Formula One car is. It's undeniably impressive to watch, but everything they do has been planned to the nth degree. There's no real there's no spontaneous actions by them. It's all very.
I would disagree with
that. Really?
So a lot of it. But how do you, so when Liam Williams picks up a knocked on high ball and goes on a mazy run beating five players, is that pre-planned to the nth degree?
No, it's not. But what I mean by that is, if you watch that, I mean, I can almost watch them and you say, oh, look, there's three men running in a pod and they pull it back and there's another three men. And you know, and then they make that break and there's a 2-on-2 and then they stab it through with that little crossfield kick. I kind of know what they're doing. And I love to watch it. But it's not like pass the ball to, what's the name, DuPont or Chaslin Colby and just hope for the best.
There's elements that are similar to that, as I described before, but a lot of it is incredibly fine-tuned, but I don't think that makes it boring. Or yeah. Certainly,
no,
to me, it doesn't.
Yeah, it depends what you... I mean, I don't think...
No, it's interesting to go along with your, like, race car analogy, they're a car that is, like as Phil said, so precisely engineered, so satisfying. They're like, you know when like really expensive cars, when you shut the door, they make that really satisfying door shutting noise.
Yes.
Whereas then sometimes you just want to go onto a country lane and rag a car that where you're on the edge and you're not quite sure whether you're going to end up in a ditch or just carving around the corner. I'd rather travel in style, Saracen style.
I completely agree. And I just to expand on this terrible analogy. Toulouse, for me, is like one of those American drag racers. Can be incredibly fast or can blow up, killing everyone, including spectators.
Well, yes. on that, shall we go on to the Leinster-Toulouse game, or shall we cover the Challenge Cup semi-finals?
I'm not going over old ground. Don't worry, boys. Don't worry. Uh-oh. But I want 30 seconds.
Oh,
just 30 seconds. That's it.
Of course.
Just on the Billy Vunipola thing, it sparked up a lot of people saying a lot of stuff. I'm not going to go into any of it. But I would just direct anyone to read Hugo Monier's piece in The Guardian, which came out on Thursday last week. I thought it was excellent. He absolutely nailed the sanctimonious mob that exists on Twitter. He pointed out some really interesting, thought-provoking points, I thought were really well-balanced. I think everyone should go and read it. And just someone else pointed something out to me, which I said I'd mentioned on the pods, which is the World 7 Series, which the Australian Rugby Union and all other rugby unions send teams to, is in Dubai, a country where Sharia law is a thing. And... premarital sex is punishable by 100 lashes. Where homosexuality is illegal, where stoning to death is still a legal crime, and no one has any problems sending their sponsors, sending their teams to a country, so a state. So we're not talking about a company that's based in there, but we're talking about the actual nation. No one has an issue sending teams to a country where homosexuality is illegal, but they'll really, really come down hard on a guy like Vinny Vunipola, who was probably misguided in the way he expressed himself, but has done nothing physically to or materially to affect anyone. So I just thought that was quite an interesting, nuanced position nuance, as I keep saying, should be your word of 2019. Go and read Ugo Monye's piece. It was great.
Excellent.
It was a good piece. Just on this story, because there's one thing, and I don't want to get into it any further, but there's one new bit of news, which was the shock that Israel Flau was going to appeal the decision. There is an appeal date set for the weekend of I think it's the 4th and 5th of May, which, I mean, I am surprised. It does blow the conspiracy theory that he was looking for a move to France out of the water.
Yes.
Somewhat. But yeah, that's the decision. We'll find out more when that happens.
Well, hopefully you'll get a nice juicy payout. Now,
there was one article that suggested that there are some lawyers who are saying that it would contravene his right to religious freedom. But we'll see. It'll be interesting to watch. I'm saying nothing on what I think. I'm just stating the facts that that's an article I read.
As we're kind of a little bit political, Tim, you are a man of the people. I'd say that you connect very well with the common man. Would you agree with that?
I hope so.
So can you just tell me what it's like to fly on a private jet with the Harlequins team?
That's honestly, I've ticked off a couple of things that I've sort of wanted to tick off my list. I've never travelled business class or by private jet or whatever, but I did this weekend.
Wow.
Got a seat on the Harlequins plane, and it was unreal.
Was it
unbelievable. So I turned up at Stansted Airport, just went to the main airport, couldn't see anything on any departure boards. And so I went up to the desk and said, got the 4:45 PM flight to Clermont. Where do I find that? It's a private charter flight. And they couldn't find it anywhere. They had to make about half a dozen phone calls. And they said, oh yeah, you need to go up the road to the Diamond Hangar.
What? They have one of those at Sale, but I'll tell you about that later.
So I took the taxi to the Diamond Hangar a couple of miles away, and it's how the other half live. Oh my God, you walk into this opulent room where the Saracens team was sat around. There were these incredible lounges. It's the sort of place I can imagine like having a yoga retreat, and then there's like a Japanese garden in the middle of it. You could stroll around, and then what? When they said, oh, you need to come through to the flight. You walked out the front door, got into these cars, which are already there to drive you. We thought, well, how far are we going? They take you about 100 metres around the corner into a hangar that's like something out of a Bond movie, onto a plane that, you know, I mean, it was quite a big plane, but there was hardly any seats on it. So I could stretch my legs right out in front of me and not touch anyone. It was opulent.
I saw some of your pictures, because obviously you shared some pictures on our little group, and I can legitimately say it looks like the sort of hangar. Do you know when a world leader has to fly out immediately, or like the CIA are launching a mission? Clean, white,
yeah.
Like one aircraft in there.
Air Force One type stuff.
Exactly. It looked very, very cool. And is that your first time travelling with a team to a European game?
Yeah, it was.
And what are they like? I mean, is it just another business day to them, or were they quite excited to be on the plane? Are they rowdy? Were they quiet? What were the boys like?
They weren't rowdy. They weren't rowdy. Everyone had the headphones on and was into whatever show they were watching. Mm. Joe Marler's a proper card. I don't think he'd mind me saying, but he walked from one side of this little hangar room that we were in. And I just saw him out the corner of my eye walking all the way across the room, walked in front of me, walked past me, walked over to Nick Evans, who was sat in this little area with all the coaches. And I heard him say to Nick Evans, he walked all the way across just to say to Nick Evans, has anyone ever told you you look like a malnourished Heinrich Brousseau? And then he walked all the way back to where he was.
Nice. Nice.
It is true as well.
Yeah. Very good spot.
So, they seem like lovely blokes. I managed to keep my Chris Robshaw man crush in check and didn't bug him.
Did you sit next to him?
I sat across from him on the way back.
Why did you sit next to him? Hi, Chris, massive fan.
Well, he's such a guy. What a guy. What a guy he is.
He had a good game as well.
I didn't see any of this game, so you have to tell me about it.
Well, before we talk about the game, a question for you. Do you think Munster are the best travelling fans in Europe? domestic club fans.
They're more Leinster.
Yeah, they have to be. No, Munster have to be.
I think Munster travel better than Leinster from what I've seen.
Okay.
And
12,000 of them at the Rico.
Massively outnumbered Saracens as well at the Rico.
Oh.
3-1.
Yeah.
3-1.
Enormously outnumbered Saracens. So that's question number one. And then question number two, which Tim, you are now qualified to answer, is Clermont, the Stade Marcel Michelin, is it the best atmosphere for a domestic rugby game you've ever seen?
I can answer this because I've been to Thomond Park for a big European match. I've been to the Aviva Stadium, been to, what's the place Leinster play at home? Race ground thing.
RDS.
Yeah.
RDS. I've been there. I've been to La Rochelle. I haven't been to the new Racing Metro Stadium, so I can't say there, but comfortably, yes. It's a bucket list place. It's a bucket list place to go and watch rugby. It is out of this world.
Wow. It looked incredible. So that I know your introduction to the show on Saturday night was curtailed because of the extended sale game, but that kind of 5-minute little snippet you did with Ben Kay right at the start
Ben
of the
Kay,
show,
yeah.
The atmosphere on that looked unbelievable. And that was the players were just warming up behind you.
Yeah, it was out of this world. And the way the stadium is, that it's so steep that the fans are so close to the pitch, and they are mental. They are mental. And it's something like Clermont's a town of only like 100,000 people, and there was 20,000 people in there.
Bloody hell. Yeah. So, I think that the organisers, well, ERPC or whoever they are, what's it to answer for here? The junior competition, the Challenge Cup, or whatever we call it nowadays, had two absolutely bouncing games. And in terms of that, I mean, I don't know what the games like themselves, I haven't seen, but from what you've told me about the crowd in Clermont and from what I saw the crowd in La Rochelle, it looked bloody awesome.
Yeah.
But those two games were played at those teams' home stadiums. I think it's down to the home team, whoever received the hire, to organise the stadium, because Coventry isn't going to work. I mean, it just isn't going to work.
I suspect that Saracens did organise that.
Do you reckon?
I think so, yeah.
So, my understanding...
I was trying to think of a stadium that they could have picked. I'm not sure.
I'd say the Allianz, personally.
So, my understanding of the rule is it is organised by European Rugby, but they can select the home stadium, providing it meets the criteria of a stadium that is suitable for a semi-final game.
So maybe Tottenham wasn't ready, maybe Wembley wasn't available, maybe Twickenham or Olympic Stadium.
Would you want those stadiums? So you would get more Saracen fans travelling into London than you would to Coventry.
100%.
But yeah,
not 70,000 of them.
If it's 100% more, you've got 7,000 fans. So you, even with the 12,000 Munster fans, you've got 19,000 in a 70,000 or a 60,000.
A few weeks ago, they played Harlequins in Twickenham, and there's far more.
There's a load of free tickets given out for those games, I think.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, there are a lot of stadiums in London. I just think, you know, as a fan, you know, look, when we select our games as neutrals to go and watch, we literally do it half based on who's playing and half based on how fun the town is.
True.
So, like, you know, we didn't really want to see Italy play the All Blacks, but we did want to go and have a few Negronis in Rome.
Correct.
And I just, for the life, I'm not even sure you can buy a Negroni in Coventry.
In fact, can we just rewind to that game? So, I've never seen the hack alive, and you made me really late because we wanted to sit and have a long lunch. And then by half time, JB was going, should we just get to town? Should we just get to town?
Yeah, I can care less. And that would be, so I don't really want to go to Coventry. And it's not, you know, I'm not trying to offend the people of Coventry, and, you know, Wasps are different because people of Coventry want to go and watch Wasps. I just think it's a bad place for a European semi.
I agree with that. Wholeheartedly agree with that.
Mm. So the game.
100%.
So the Clermont game. Do we learn anything about Clermont? Are they now the clear-cut favourites for this whole thing?
So I found it...
I don't think they played their best. I don't think they played the best they have. They looked... They can cut you to ribbons, but they weren't... I mean, the Harlequins were great. They did really well.
Mm.
It was an interesting game. So the bit that I found was interesting was how importantly Claremont treated the game. And by that I mean they really recognised the importance of taking points. So Lopez took a couple of pot shots for drop goals.
Mm.
They almost always, when they had a kickable shot, they almost always went for the post rather than the corner in order to build a lead. And that is that's reflected in the scoreboard, because it was two tries for Claremont and four tries to Harlequins. So Harlequins were playing more of the rugby, not because Claremont can't, but because they were too cautious to play the open rugby.
Really?
Which I think, and I was actually thinking of this, so they were a better team than Harlequins. They had more attacking threats, and Quins played very well. Quins played really well, but Claremont always had enough muscle. I do suspect they were using this as a precursor to top 14 knockout rugby, because they would like to win the Challenge Cup. Who wouldn't? They want a bit of silverware, but I think they're second top in the top 14. They want to. They have to win the top 14.
Now, can someone remind me what it is that Claremont are really bad at? Is it not winning Europe? Is it not winning the top 14? Or is it both?
I think it's both. Always the bridesmaid.
It's both, really. Losing in semi-finals and finals in the Champions Cup is what they do. If they win this will be their third win of the Challenge Cup. But yeah, they've had some heartache lately. But it's interesting. Benjamin Kaiser, after the game, when I spoke to him, said that they need to, by the final, they need to get used to European referees. I think it was kind of quite a guarded, subtle way of saying, God, they bloody ref things differently. George Lacey to the refs they're used to in France. So I think he felt like they didn't manage that very well, but they had enough in their tank. But on the Quinn side of things, your man Marcus Smith was awesome, JB.
Yeah,
he's a good player, isn't he?
He was awesome.
Think he's going to start for England?
In time for the World Cup?
Understood, he's done it. Danny Cipriani?
I don't think so, but I tell you what, he's some player. And I was sat in one of the dugouts, and I just watched him for a little bit. And when Quins were mounting their comeback in the second half, when Quins got points and just in between things, the way he was grabbing the team by the scruff of the neck really impressed me. His body language, G'ing people up, taking control.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I was watching him thinking, this is a proper player.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's how I felt. I watched him against Ulster two, 18 months ago, whatever it was. And the thing which impressed me the most is, well, you're basically talking about a kid, aren't you? Yeah. You know, he's just a kid. And at the time he was 18, I think, maybe he was 19. But he's putting in little dinks for Jamie Roberts to catch. So you've got to basically marshal Jamie Roberts on the field, who's like a Lions man of the series, two tours underneath his belt, a couple of grand slams, a doctor, one of the most respected names in the game. And you've got an 18-year-old saying, yeah, run here, run there, catch that, chase this. And I think that's more than his physical talent, which is immense. It's that sort of leadership that he's got.
I would also add, I think Mike Brown is playing right up there with the best rugby he's ever played.
I agree.
I'm not exaggerating.
Agree with that. And the finish for his try was exceptional.
Mm. Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
And Chris Robshaw, as we mentioned, I think he is playing out of his skin.
Yeah, the competition for those two slots has really pushed those boys on.
Do you know, though, I can't help but feel this is... It's all very nice, and it's kind of Quinsy, in that it's a great performance, from what you guys say. They're all playing really well, but they all played really well, and effectively this game never mattered anyway, because they lost it. And how does that affect them going forward into their next game? Because they've lost quite a few on the bounce now.
They have.
They've mounted a comeback. They've played well. They've still lost. You know, there's going to be bruised bodies, bruised egos. I'm not entirely sure it helps them.
It probably doesn't in terms of the league and securing top four. They had to go for it 100%. Because if you got a win here, you'd be saying the exact opposite of all those things. And they were in it. I mean, if that try, the Dombrandt offload, was it to Saïli? The try with kind of 10 minutes to go. If that stands, it's a different game. It's a different finish.
Yeah, well, they've got Exeter next. So that could well be a loss at Sandy Park. Yeah. So I don't know what that spins them onto, but it's not a favourable record. They've then got Leicester at home. I think they'll do Leicester. I think Leicester will have given up by then.
They'll win that.
I think Leicester will feel that safe. Then they've got Saracens. No, they haven't. That's Exeter. Who have they got? Then they've got Wasps. At Wasps, and that actually could be... So
they could win 2 out of 3.
Well, I mean, Wasps are 3 points behind them.
Yeah.
So Wasps win that, and potentially Wasps go into the top four. Amazingly. Unbelievably, actually.
Yeah.
So, very, very good.
Just on the two wingers in this, not the Harlequins wingers, the two Clermont wingers. Raka and Penno. Is there a more dangerous wing pairing, a club-level wing pairing in the world right now?
Maybe Sale in Ashton, Denny, McGuigan, Yard, whichever pair that they go for. But, you know, you'd argue that they're not really playing great.
They're not playing as well. I mean, the Pernod try, which he had no right to score that, but he had the vision, the chip, the skill, the pace to execute it perfectly. That was just phenomenal.
I'm trying to think of other good wing pairings. Rock and Dagooney and... What's his name? Big Joe?
Big Joe.
When they're both on song...
Colby and Uge have got to be close.
Yes. Colby and Uge is a good shout.
Yeah, and Saracens can put out some, you know, tasty wingers, to be fair to them.
They can.
But yeah, you're probably right. They're probably as dangerous as anyone. Pernod's an exceptional talent. But mind you, Raka's not bad either.
Raka is fairly handy.
Very French.
Yes.
Is he qualified for France now?
He will do soon, I think.
Bloody hell.
I just want him to play for Fiji in the World Cup.
I don't want him to play for France. Land of his fathers. Anyone watch the Sale game?
I watched most of the second half.
Disappointing, I thought.
Watched a lot of Nigel Owens in this game.
Oh, God. I'm really torn on this. I hated how this is officiated. I hated it. It felt like every decision had to be referred to the TMO. And Nigel Owens isn't that sort of ref. He's a very good, instinctive ref who makes the majority of the right decisions and lets the boys play. He literally, that's what he does. I thought it was poor. I thought it was really poor how it was all handled. I think everyone might say it was the Nigel Owens show. I think it was more his assistant refs kind of getting in his ear.
So Luke Pearce was one of the assistants.
It was the other Ian something, isn't it? Is it Ian? He was the ref in what's Georgia, Romania. Him.
Okay.
Ian Welshman. Tempest, Ben White. Ben White was there. He's the other Welshman.
No, it wasn't him. You'll recognise, he looks... bald fella. Quite a large bald fella. Good ref.
Oh, I don't know.
But, like, there's a lot, you know, there's lots of pep talks going on, like, let's all concentrate. Yeah, guys, it isn't about you. You know, just let the game develop. And I kind of think, you know, if you miss a few things, like there was one Sale, I think it was a Sale knock-on, which, you know, you could only see from one angle and they pulled it back, and it didn't really affect play. They just carry on. You know, just crack on. There were a few things that I just... I'll give you an example of how I think Nigel Owens likes to ref and what he wanted to happen and what actually happened. So, do you see the Denny Solomona yellow card?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Now, It is a yellow card, right? It just is because it is. But you can...
It just is because it is.
I'm not going to argue if it is or it isn't, right? But I can tell Nigel Owens isn't wanting to give that card. So the first thing that they're checking for is grounding. And they're, okay, well, there's no grounding. And then it's kind of like the secondary effect. Was there a process crime? So, oh, hang on, that's a bit high. Oh, it was a bit high. Oh, was it the high tackle that prevented the try? Oh, hang on. There we go. That's a penalty try. Now, can we check that he was onside before making the run? So in my mind, that's Nigel Owens thinking... I would never give a yellow card if this is just open play, and I call it an open play. But I have to give a yellow card because we've gone through the process. It's clear that that's high. It's clear that it prevented the try. That therefore has to be a yellow card. So I may as well go through the rest of the process now to say, was that guy onside? Because if he wasn't onside, then I can get away with not giving the yellow card and the high.
But shouldn't the yellow card, if it is a yellow card, in which it was in Nigel's mind, shouldn't that overrule the offside, because that's a more serious offence?
No, because it wasn't a high shot with force. Well, it was more like the illegal action, which you can't do, prevented the try. I think if that was in open play, he might just say penalty. So it's like giving away a penalty sort of infraction to prevent the try rather than a reckless or high shot.
Very similar to the Joe Tacori tackle that the French sighting panel said warranted no sanction.
There was a big difference in the level of force between the two.
Yeah,
and I was okay with the Joe Tacori, the sighting panel findings on that. You never like to see a player get knocked out, but I think they probably got it right in that situation.
Yeah, I think they probably did.
There's a big difference with Denny because there was very, very little force.
Yeah, I mean, they both ended up back on their feet, I think. They sort of like rolled around and on their feet. Yeah, I agree. But it was the right call because, well, you know, that's what the law states. It just wouldn't have happened that way if they hadn't have had to go to the TMO. And the TMO just couldn't, you know, he had such a busy day. And I think the French director didn't help much because he kept on hiding things.
For the final one, where he just wouldn't show the angle that everyone wanted to see.
Exactly. So,
which actually did, I think him not showing that final angle, the angle from behind number 23, was what got number 23 yellow carded. Because he didn't actually make any contact with Denny's head. He just kind of...
Oh, I thought he did.
I think Denny pulls his head back with no contact.
Regardless, I think an attempted kick to the head...
I don't think it was an attempted kick to the head. I think he was just trying to...
Anyway.
Yeah. I'm with you. I just also want to say Aweini Antonio has got the Tig burn... the Tig burn affliction of... You know, really making them the very most of an incidental bit of contact, which almost got James Phillips yellow carded. Yeah. Almost got James Phillips yellow carded, but for some utterly confusing chat between Big Nige and the TMO.
Yeah, and Nigel got that right, as far as I'm concerned.
As far as I'm concerned, he did. Yeah.
So which Aweini Antonio and Dante Preissot scrummaged phenomenally well.
They were so good.
Considering how solid he is, impossible he is to move at scrum time. To fly with a tiny bit of contact there is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it's worth talking about the La Rochelle scrum. A sail sharks are no slouch when it comes to scrummaging. In fact, they're bloody brilliant. They're a really good scrummaging side. I have not seen them being manhandled like that in set piece. I was going to say since I've started doing this podcast. It just doesn't happen. You know, they know their jobs inside out. Ross Harrison had a tough old time.
Maybe we have been doing the podcast in the era of Tony Buckley, so I would maybe take that back.
Yes, fair, very, very fair.
One man I'd like to talk about, only briefly, but Victor Vito.
Okay.
So his yellow card, I think that was exactly the right call from Nigel.
I can't remember it now. What happened?
He deliberately collapsed them all 2 yards from the try line, knew exactly what he was doing. But, so there was a point probably 65, 70 minutes into this game where, like, this game was absolute chaos. It was so physical, so demanding, so energetic. And there was a shot of, it was one of the Curries, it was just his head. I don't know which one it was, but he was like... breathing through his arse, there was like blood, snot and sweat smeared on all corners of his face. His hair was all over the place. And then a second later, they snapped to Victor Vito, and he every single hair perfectly in place. he was barely breathing, not a drop of sweat on his brow.
He's got good shoulders as well, hasn't he? Good traps.
He is a seriously handsome dude,
and a serious specimen.
Yeah,
completely.
He is a hell of a player.
Yeah. And the Currys are all action.
They are 100% action.
Yeah, they're great players, but you know, maybe not as attractive as Victor Vito. I think I can concede that.
Not many people are.
Just a few other things on this performance. I mean, I don't like... I'm not going to be too critical, but I thought James O'Connor did not have a good game. He's playing like someone who thinks he's fast rather than being fast. And there's nothing worse than thinking you're... I mean, if you're no longer fast, it's really a real good idea to recognise that and do something different with your game, not play like you're really fast. So he had two early interventions, both run into touch, then threw a ball into touch later. I thought, I'm going to put that down to a little bit of lack of game fitness. Thought Denny, as awesome as he is, he just had no space to operate in, which isn't good for him. And lastly, like, you know, the pack just had too much to deal with. And I think this game was close because, well, there were so many stoppages. I think if this was a fluid game, La Rochelle started getting over the game line, really stretching sail, this could have been a lot bigger scoreline to La Rochelle personally.
Yeah, but
I'm really looking forward to that final. It should be, well, you've got lots of huge men and lots of very quick men.
Yes, quite. Which brings us nicely on to Toulouse, actually. Because they are a ridiculous mix of enormous men and very small, quick men.
Yes. Yeah, particularly with Dupont playing 10. Because he is lightning.
I love him.
He's steppy. He's brilliant. I kind of wish he wasn't playing 10. Just because Entomac has been so good. Now, I know Entomac had that very heavy strapping on one of his thighs that they were speculating that's the reason why he didn't start. But I just felt that with Dupont there, Toulouse lost a bit of that control and game management.
Now, shall we talk about this after we just round up some news so we can finish with a bang?
Okay.
You okay with that, Tim?
Yeah.
Cool. Todd Blackadder's leaving Bath. Who saw that coming?
Yeah, everyone.
I actually thought this was already announced.
It was announced that he had an optional 1 year. I think I'm right in saying that. He had an optional 1 year, and that's not being enacted.
Yeah, I don't actually think this is a big deal at all. In fact, I know it's not a big deal, because I think I called at the start of the season that Matt O'Connor should be fired, and then Blackadder fired immediately afterwards. Now, there's no two ways about it. Blackadder is a better acquisition than Matt O'Connor was. But in terms of what he's done so far, and you know, in terms of how he's... You know, how he's held within that Bath organisation, I don't think he's a particularly good fit. I think it's probably best if he moves on. And one of the things which highlights this most to me is the whole debacle around Rhys Priestland, their number 10. You know, their squad signings have not been good. I don't think they know really how they want to play the game, despite having some of the best players in the Premier, probably second or third best squad in the league. They just don't perform.
Well, it's interesting because I remember the year that he came in, was it 3 years ago? And he came in at the end of the Super Rugby season. So it was two-thirds of the way through Bath's pre-season.
And everyone he watched every one of their games for the last 3 years on DVD.
Yeah, but allegedly.
Do you remember that?
I do remember that, yeah. But for that first season, or certainly for the first half of that first season, everyone gave him a load of slack because he'd only come in right at the end. He'd not been able to put his blueprint and his game plan. And kind of 2 years after that, we're still really waiting for him to...
Yeah, what is your plan? Tell me your plan.
Apply a blueprint.
Well, I'd love to know. I would love to know how much Bruce Craig's fingers are in that pie when it comes to signings and stuff. I'd love to know.
Well, that's a good point.
I have a suspicion that Todd Blackadder or whoever's in charge at Bath probably just gets players landing on them that they didn't even ask for.
That allegedly happened with, is it Noriega, the prop that they've got?
The Argentine lad.
Yeah, have I got the right prop? Anyway, apparently he showed up with his kit. No one knows who he is. I've heard multiple things about Todd Blackadder. Like, and it's not necessarily a criticism, but maybe just how he does business. He does not know who he's playing against week to week. Like, he doesn't do player analysis, doesn't know the name, struggles to know who Ben Youngs was. And well, maybe that's because he's focused so much on Bath. But whatever it is, it's just not really working.
So
who would you have in? Because I'd love to see. I don't think it will happen. He's just signed a new deal, but I'd love to see Big Stu being given like a head coach role.
I think we've seen
Stuart Lancaster.
I mean, I think you've got to look back at these things. Kind of like Stuart Lancaster and Todd Blackadder are basically similar people, aren't they? In terms of probably quite good interpersonally, quite good, you know, with player developments. Or personnel development, nice guys. But like, you know, in the same way that we looked at Todd Blackadder and people go, oh, it's great, look, he never won anything with the Crusaders. And everyone thought that was like a plus at the time. You look at Stuart Lancaster and, yeah, he is the number two in a very successful Leinster side, which is great.
That's why I'm not saying DOR. I'm saying head coach.
Oh, well, what about just a coach? Just a consultant coach? But I wouldn't give him the reins, no. Not. I don't think I would.
Well, what role is Stuart Hooper going to take?
Who knows? I mean, he's a general manager, is he not?
He is, yeah. He's currently their general manager.
Yeah, I think that's a... I mean, the people that know about Stuart Hooper talk about him in absolutely glowing terms. You know, they say a man of absolute integrity, this and the other. I think I would rip it all up and start again. That's what I think I'd do. But there's also a lot of money invested in Stuart Hooper. I think they've sent him on bloody, you know, degree courses for management and all sorts. So I, the answer is I don't know. But if I was in charge, I would tear it all up and start again.
We've got an unbelievable game of rugby we've not even touched on yet.
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I've got one more thing I'd like your opinions on. The RFU, good old RFU, have come down, right? And told all coaches, I think it's up to under 18, that in every team, there is a minimum standard that every player has to get half a game. What's your initial thoughts on that?
So, has it actually been put in place, or is this just...
No, it's in place now.
It's in place now?
Yeah, so if you're in the RFU structures, you've got a matchday squad, no child...
So, from next season?
Yeah. No child is... every child must have half a game.
So my initial reaction is up to 18, which is what I read, is too late. I don't have any problem with it as a principle up to, say, I don't know, 12, 13?
Yeah.
I just think that seems too late to be doing it.
Tim?
I don't have a huge... issue with it. If I'm honest, I was interested to ask you what your main issue with it is, JB. I do kind of agree with Phil that it maybe 18 is too late, but then again, it's still amateur, and no one's saying you have to put 30 blokes in your squad.
Yeah,
but we're only talking about maybe four players sat on the sideline. Yeah, it should be about. Engagement, enjoyment, long term enjoyment in the game that's going to last you a lifetime. I think these are really impressionable and important years. And I was probably lucky not to be in that position where I was a player sat on the sideline, but I can imagine it would do you read in.
Yeah, is it? Okay, so first of all, I think it's really good guidance. I think the guidance of saying use all of your squad is a pretty solid principle. I have no problem with that. Because you should use all of your squad. And if you've got things like interchanges, like we have at TOC H, you're very wise to get the strongest squad that you can and rotate them. That's not because I feel sorry for the guys on my bench. It's because they're bloody good players and, you know, you need to get as much game time out of everyone as possible. So I have no problem with the guidance. But I do have a problem with it being mandatory. I think it's a terrible idea to be mandatory. Because, you know, for instance, okay, first of all, I don't think it takes seriously enough how much these kids want to play rugby. So when I was 14, I don't know if you remember being 14 playing rugby. Like, if I had lost a game, particularly against a local rival, that was like a small death. Like, that was really, really serious stuff. And I can't imagine how annoyed I'd be if the coach had taken me off, or in fact, I actually spent a lot more time on the bench than probably you two did. Or if you were the kid replaced for the kid that wasn't better, you'd feel that as a real injustice. I mean, I certainly would. That'd be the first thing. The second thing is, I really have trouble with the idea that winning is not important to kids. I think that is absolute nonsense. It is vital to their enjoyment. If you're playing rugby, you basically play to win. I don't care what you say, it is hugely important. And if you lose, that's hugely important too, because it should hurt and it should be miserable, because that's how
we're not talking about the misery of losing, but that teaches you lessons as well. We're actually talking about the taking something out of the hands of grown-ups who should know better. Because I think if I was coaching a team, I wouldn't have someone sat shivering on the touchline for 75 minutes and then chuck them on 5 minutes at the end.
Exactly. Because, well, funny you should mention that, Tim.
This is actually probably, I don't know, I'm assuming they've got some data or they had some research that's been the prelude to bringing this in, but it's probably just mandating things that adults should already be doing.
Well, that's interesting you say that, okay? So that's exactly my point, which is the coach of these teams should know. It should be ultimately their decision. But imagine if you weren't ready for half a game, and you've got to have half a game with the bigger boys. Or even worse, I mean, kids are brutal. Kids are absolutely brutal. If you came on for half a game and absolutely ruined it for your mates, you would get a lot of stick. Anyway, the last part of this, right, is if this doesn't apply to private schools, what are you going to have? Are lads going to club rugby getting exposure there in this soft, everyone wins sort of atmosphere? Meanwhile, these lads in private school, which are all coached by ex-professionals, and to them, it really does matter if you win or lose, not only for the kids, but also for the coaches who could well get fired. They're going to grow up in a much more competitive environment, and the kids that are really good, or even middling, are going to get much more game time than the kids which are in the clubs.
These private schools you speak of run six teams on a Wednesday everyone plays. This is I've been in teams that have had, well, the school I was at, there was a kind of you got rewarded for your attendance an effort at training, so there were guys that got put into teams that probably weren't up to the standard, but they got their game time. I understand your point, JB. I disagree, but I think that I'm much more concerned with young people enjoying physical activity and physical accomplishment than with them winning matches, although that obviously is something which is important to them as well.
Yeah, I agree with everything. I agree with all of that. I just wonder if we are sort of devaluing it by just, saying everyone gets half a game. I mean, really, you should earn these things. And actually, why don't we just leave it up to the coaches? I mean, why don't we just leave this as advice for coaches and let them use their discretion?
Yeah, I could get on board with that as well, that point.
Mm. Yeah.
Which leads us nicely on to RFU funding cuts. Does anyone know anything about RFU funding cuts? Because you put it on my list.
There's a few funding cuts, mostly around travel budgets, that have been announced this week, and it's all part of the overall RFU strategy to kind of sort out their bank balance. It's not a huge storyline. It's not been that widely reported everywhere, but it was announced this week.
I did get a chairman of a club contact me about this, actually, but it was so in detail, and I'm struggling to get excited about it, really.
I'll tell you what, we've got some barren weeks in the summer. Mm. Or less barren weeks than normal, because there's all the Rugby World Cup warm-up, but we're still going to have some barren weeks, so we could do an extra podcast deep dive when we know a little bit more.
Yeah. So, Tim, I'm fully envisaging a full 2 weeks of Danny Cipriani getting called up to the World Cup squad.
Yes.
Followed by
Marcus Smith.
Followed by Danny Cipriani going on a night out with the World Cup squad. Followed by the court case or whatever legal ramifications happen after Danny Cipriani's night out with the World Cup
and
squad.
And then, oh my God, right. So Danny Cipriani's nailed on World Cup starter. He's had a great pre-season. Then he goes out, and Senek, which is completely not his fault, I might add, completely not his fault, goes down, meaning he can no longer play in the World Cup. And they need the next closest thing to Danny Cipriani. What do they do?
No, someone gets a video of Danny Cipriani doing something which, taken out of context, looks bad. And then, to make matters worse, Owen Farrell likes it on Instagram.
They both have to go. Who's yeah. next up? Who's next up?
Marcus Smith.
Yes, he is. Marcus Smith. All I need to do now is make a video for 888 betting, and you watch it come true.
Right, we have been farting and fannying around for way too long. Let's talk about this game. Let's talk about Leinster Toulouse.
Yeah.
I just want to say, Toulouse's attack never got into gear, but when they do click, they are like a precision-engineered razor.
Oh, aren't they just?
They're so sharp. Like a cornerstone razor, I'd say.
What a great
Which you
great
can
analogy.
Get delivered to you in a beautiful presentation box. You can get, as many people have been posting pictures of, they absolutely love their brand new free aluminium shaft with their initials engraved on it. You get that for free because you listen to us. £4. Get your free aluminium shaft. Get your six amazing cornerstone razors. We've had people saying that that there are lots of these type of things about cornerstone are the best. So because you listen to us, you can get it for £4 at cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's www.cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. Fill your boots.
Excellent.
It's a good point you make, because so Toulouse never really got into this game. And I mentioned before about Dupont playing 10, which I think contributed to it. I think Leinster's, their physicality up front and their defensive shape also prevented Toulouse
their
from...
Their defensive shape was excellent.
Yeah.
It really was excellent.
It was suffocating, and they were forcing... So they were limiting Colby and Uge and Ramos, that whole back three. They were limiting them to kind of half chances and forcing them back in field. Mm. So forcing them back in field where there was just a wave of Leinster defenders to crush them.
So I could watch this Dupont play every day. If he played for Sale, right, I would go to training every day to watch him play. That's how much I like him. At 10. Oh, no, because AJ plays 10. For the Jets, if he played for the Jets.
Yeah, he's not going to play 9, because that's there.
He's not going to play 10.
He's not going to play 10. But he's not going to play in the wing.
Yeah, I'd go and watch him every day. I thought he played all right, actually. I mean, I know what you're saying, that there you miss him from the base of those rucks because he adds a little bit extra.
And also, I don't think his decision making as a 10, so a receiver kicker, was as good as it could have been.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Like, was it him that threw the pass which got intercepted by Lama?
Oh no! Was it him actually? Because he'd gone to 9 at that point.
Yeah. It wasn't a bad decision from 10. It was just a bad decision, but heartbreak, absolute heartbreak. Because I wanted Toulouse to win this so badly, so badly.
I understand. I do understand. You know that they've got a style, but this is a European semi-final, and you made the point with Clermont earlier, who were at home, heavy favourites, and they still took every point that was on offer. And Toulouse, I don't get their thinking. They didn't. And you've got to stay in touch with Leinster. And when you're playing catch-up against that defence, you've got no chance.
Yeah, so just before half-time, they made a howler of a decision, in my opinion. They should have taken the three points there.
Oh, yeah.
Howler of a decision.
Absolutely. That was a bonkers decision. And that was such a weird end to the half. Because, basically, after the clock had gone red... Toulouse had a scrum in Leinster's 22. Just as the clock went red, they gave away a penalty. They gave away two penalties, which allowed Leinster to go from their 22 to halfway line to Toulouse's 22. They gave away the penalty, which was, I think, the Conan block, which allowed Toulouse to go to halfway. Leinster gave away another penalty. So you're on like 47 minutes, and with each team having a visit to the opposition's 22, and no one got any points out of
just
it.
Just kick the damn ball.
Yeah.
Just kick the damn ball.
Just take the point. You've had enough chances, take the points.
Yeah, I completely agree. Do you know what I do like about Toulouse? I mean, I'm not going to talk about Toulouse anymore because I need to talk about Leinster at some point. I love how they attack through the ruck. And every time they do it, even if it's like, phase and then same and then next phase, it takes everyone by utter surprise every time. Like, they just walk over the top of the ruck, like, oh Christ, they've gone over the ruck, and then they do it again and again. It's a very French thing to do, and then they start the offloading. And you don't really see that in the Prem or Pro 14. Very French thing to do.
It is, and they didn't really get that offloading going until it was already too late.
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah, there's a really good bit in this game where they profiled Cheslin Colby because he's so good. He's so, so good, right? Just wasn't in this game. And I can't remember who, one of the BT Sports people said it. They were saying, Colby, if your mother out there and you're worried about, your son playing rugby, here he is. He's 12 stone or 14 stone and, you can do this, that and the other. 30 minutes in, James Lowe has run over him twice. And like, that is why, mothers, that's why you don't encourage your son to play rugby at 14 stone. Get him to at least 16.
He's not 14 stone as well.
What is he, 12?
79, 12 and a half, 12 and a bit, 12 and a half.
Yeah, that's why, 12 stone players, great for a little bit of time, and then they meet James Lowe. And James Lowe put his hand in his chest and made him look like a starfish.
James Lowe played very, very well. Yeah, the way he finished those two tries, and...
Ireland's James Lowe in November.
Is it November?
Wow.
Something like that.
I would have him in the team.
Oh, it's after the World Cup anyway. It might be January.
It is, yeah. I know it's after the World Cup. Because he's not enormously tall, but he's so wide. Strong, he's so strong. He's low centre of gravity.
He's so powerful, yeah.
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 Just made me laugh. Oh,
Cheslin Colby's not human, though. Cheslin Colby is not human. There was one point where, I don't know how he managed it, but he popped past the ball to himself. He was in two places at once. Unreal.
This, right? Do you know these nutters that want to prove that, telepathy exists or clairvoyance exists, and they go to Uri Geller's house or Mystic Meg's house.
Uri Geller.
Yeah. People, they're looking in the wrong place. If you want to find people with potential psychic capabilities, you need to be looking at the great fly halves or scrum halves or people that are passing without looking. That is basically where you're going to find it. I think Colby's got something like that going on.
Something. It's definitely something. But in terms of Leinster, they look like the 2018 Leinster that we've not really seen this season overly, bar for a couple of occasions. There's a lot of players that were playing the kind of rugby that we know they can and they have been. And it helped having their big men back. But it's quite ominous for Saracens that they're starting to click. Sean O'Brien looked great.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Jack Conan's got to be pushing for Ireland's number 8 spot, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
He's playing really, really well at the moment.
Look, I mean, if you're starting for Leinster at number 8, you're pushing for an all-world squad at some point, so...
Well, I mean, pushing CJ Stander out of the starting 8 shirt, then.
No, CJ Stander, he played very, very, very well against Saracens. CJ Stander is one of those guys that just always plays well, no matter what his team does. But... yeah, he's going to push him. Yeah. He's a great second option.
Conan's playing really well. I'll tell you someone who I liked in the pack as well. So I liked Furlong, not necessarily for the flashy stuff, but for his work rate. And a quick example of that is the pushover try, which I think was credited to Luke McGrath, but the pushover try kind of halfway through the first half. And Furlong was working so hard. He was thrashing around like a harpooned whale, and he took two or three Toulouse players completely to one side and just took them out with a ruck, which gave the rest of the maul the momentum to drive over the line because he was working so hard nowhere near the ball.
Yeah.
Which is something he did a lot of the game, round the rucks and round the mauls.
Yeah, that's it.
I noticed one thing when I was in France, actually, on the pushover try. Clermont had, Harlequins had a pushover try. And the way they list pushover tries in France, they don't award it to a player.
What? Oh, really?
It was on the sort of list of tries and stuff, it was something like SIE Collectif.
Oh, was it?
Ah.
That's cool. So that would have meant, do you remember start of last season when the laws changed and you had to pass the ball back and then lots of wingers started getting on the scoreboard?
Number
Jimmy Goppus was the worst 2 years ago.
Yeah,
he got
exactly.
So many tries to watch, just like, running in the back of them all.
Yeah, they're about 50 yards away and they run in from fullback to start to try. Well, my guess is if it went down as collect thief, they wouldn't bother.
Well, on that Leinster pushover try, it was Luke McGrath who was credited with it, but Lama was in there working really, really hard.
Backs in walls make me laugh.
Those two are, Lama and McGrath probably are about the same weight as Colby.
Yeah.
Rubbish. I bet if you look again at the replay, Lama was stood on Ty Furlong's back like Teen Wolf, just surfing his way into a line.
Like, you know, if you ever see backs and mauls, I mean, I'm not doing the cliche backs versus forwards thing, but like the body positions which they attach to these, what, like they're pushing with their chest bolt upright.
Listen, Johnny May would prove you wrong, Jamie.
Can we post a picture on our Egg Chasers account of our good friend Ollie Poole on the side of a mall?
Yeah, should we post it again?
Yes, I think I think we should.
Hi Ollie.
Excellent.
So just one thing on this as well. Well, two things actually. That it's just two more examples of the Toulouse decision making. One by the coaches, one by the players. So, Jerome Kano, who is such an important leader, such an important carrier, such an important defender, he was taken off after like 45 minutes.
Was he?
Yeah. It was like weirdly early for him to be taken off.
Did not even notice.
So that's one thing. So that's by the coaches. The other thing, the yellow card. The Richie Gray yellow card.
Right, this annoyed me. Right, okay. Richie Gray shouldn't be doing that. Right?
So I actually thought Wayne Barnes handled that really, really well. It would, in a normal game, if it was Toc H,
yep,
it would never, ever get picked up.
Or a European Cup final.
When there was no TMOs.
Yeah. Like, but good old days.
The game has changed.
I just felt like...
I thought Wayne Barnes handled it brilliantly. I thought, Richie Gray, you absolute idiot. Because you're giving, it was 10 yards out from your own post. The risk's there.
I agree with the yellow card, 100%. I 100% agree with it. But I also think Wayne Barnes has to see it. I just hate the idea that, you know, all the Leinster fans can jump, Leinster players can jump up and down saying, check it, waving their hands in the air. Basically snitching, you know, we all know what we think of snitches. And then they slowed on the game, and then Barnes has to go, I think I've got an extremity in the ruck, connecting with the ball, something like that. I think they should play, the TMO can only be used for serious instances of foul play and checking for tries, and that's it. I can't, this sort of dawned on me this week when I watched Man City versus Tottenham. Did you see the game?
I did, yeah.
Tottenham scored. And in football, it's so... I mean, I've not watched it for so long, but it's like your natural instinct. As soon as someone scores, that's it. They've scored. As long as the referee has given it out at that time, that's it.
And so historically, you just quickly check the linesman. There's no flag.
Goal. That's it. And that's so... And I kind of miss that, because he has to go and check with the VAR and all that. And rugby should be the same. They don't get serious foul play like we do, so you can do serious foul play and you can do checking for tries. That is it.
I like the right decision to be made.
Well, the right decision is he has to get in the right position to see it. And also, the right decision then is Richie Gray knocking the ball down, because that's the right decision for his team. Where's the gamesmanship? Where's the dark arts? Where's all that stuff?
There'll still be some dark arts.
You know, it's a shame.
It was a brain dead thing to do at a crucial time. I've never seen a simultaneous grounding before in a match. Never seen it.
No, I haven't either. We discussed this before the pod.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen it. I was looking it up because I was checking the laws. I think it's 21-18 is the official law. And apparently it happened in a Wasps game 2 or 3 years ago. But the rule is, let me just quickly get it up.
The law.
Sorry, the law. 21.18. If there's a doubt about which team first grounded the ball in goal, play is restarts. World Rugby, you need to... There's a little typo there. But play restarts with a 5 metre scrum in line with the place where the ball was grounded. The attacking team throws in. Which didn't actually happen in this case because it was advantage. But Wayne Barnes got it right, it looks like.
Yeah, he did. I mean, I think simultaneous grounding, you give a try. That's what I think.
I'm all for the to speed things up. Or
benefit
to,
of the doubt with the attack. Flip the benefit of the doubt 180 degrees round.
Yeah, cause that gives the benefit of the doubt. But I guess in this instance, both players had control of the ball. So maybe it would be unfair, and maybe a 5 metre restart, oh, sorry, a 5 metre scrum with the attacking team in possession is the right ruling.
Or maybe it should be kind of like American football, where whoever manages to wrestle the ball free first, everyone forms a circle around them. Whoever can wrestle it off the other one first gets the decision.
That's exactly how it should be, Tim. Exactly how it...
That would be entertaining, at least.
Wayne Barnes' finest moment in the match was when he said, you know when some people try and speak French and then flip to English for the second part of a sentence? He went, pa, my problem.
Was that even me? I don't know what the first French bit is.
No, it was like, pa mon problème. Like, not my problem.
Not, yeah, pa.
Oh, is it?
Not my, but he just went, pa, my problem. Like, je beat in a house. It was good. And that's probably Wayne Barnes' last European match.
Is it?
Well, it will be.
It doesn't seem right that he's retired.
Unless he does the Challenge Cup final, it'll be his last Champions Cup match.
Why, who's doing the final? Do you know?
No, but it won't be an Englishman.
Oh, no, of course it won't. Of course it won't. Nigel Owens, maybe?
Probably get Garces. Free for all at the breakdown.
Yeah,
do what you want.
Yeah, there was some... Wild West stuff in that game, the Saracens game. Just on that, I know we've covered the game, but the Munster try, that to me felt like kind of three bad decisions compounding one another because he was trying to correct his first bad decision. So Munster carry the ball in 5 metres from the Saracens line. They're stopped, held up for a fraction of a second. It collapses, or it is a tackle, but he called it as a maul, so gives Saracens put in. When that really, it wasn't a maul. There was never a maul.
No.
So it should have been, well, carry on, get the Saracens men out there and let the boys play. But to compound that, Saracens scrum goes massively forward. Conor Murray then sticks his foot in. It comes back to Munster. So two offences by the Munster team, but play on because he got it wrong in the first place. But it was a well-taken try in the end.
That was a bit of gamesmanship that you're after, JB.
That's better.
Was it Donoghue or was it Murray? I don't know which one did the hooked it back Murray, out of the scrum.
Murray, O'Donoghue was nowhere near bound by the time that scrum had gone 2 or 3 yards forward.
So, okay. Well, just to round up the Leinster game then. Well done, Leinster. Good news, the best team went through. But even better news that Toulouse are properly back, and I'm looking forward to watching them play next year, big time.
Well, that is another good point, because they had a few old heads, some of the foreign players, and guys like Medard and Uge is no spring chicken anymore. But some of the young guys they've got in that team,
wow,
they are seriously, seriously talented boys, right across backs and forwards, that will be around for years to come for Toulouse.
Yeah, they're back. Next week's games.
Yes. So, Pro 14.
I've got them here, Phil, if you want me to go through them.
Well, just going to say Pro 14, this is the final round, isn't it?
It is. So,
just one final thing. There was a picture. I think it was the Canes. Did they play the Rebels this weekend?
No, Canes played Sunwolves. And won after being 16 points down.
Oh, who played the Rebels? Anyway, whatever. There was a picture in the background of that I've seen online of... the Rebels in the tunnel, just waiting to go out, and there's a flag on the wall. It might have been in their dressing room. A flag in their dressing room which said, it says in like skateboard font, it's time to pimp on it.
What?
Yep.
Is that...
What? Sorry, what?
Is that a typo?
I don't know if that's meant to stand for something, but no, it wasn't. It's not a typo, but I don't know whether PIMP stands for something, but it's time to pimp.
What was the thing on George Ford's forearm?
Ben Youngs.
Yeah.
F-E-B-Y.
Oh, yeah. No. F it, Ben Youngs.
No.
F it, B-Y, no. Ben Youngs.
F it, back no, yourself.
No, what was it?
It was F it.
Back yourself.
Back yourself. F it, yeah. So it's F-U-C-K, it.
Hang on. Can I just point out the stupidity of that, right? Why would you spell out the swear word, but then initialise back yourself?
I don't know.
He didn't write a swear. Did George Ford have the F word on it?
Yeah, I'm
sure it did. Yeah.
B.Y.
Yeah.
Ben Youngs.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Because that's what caught your attention, right? It's a swear word.
Yeah.
If you said back yourself, you're like, oh, yeah, obviously he wants to back himself. Why back yourself needs to be cryptic. But yeah. Fuck it.
If anyone knows what pimp means is an acronym for, then yeah, let us know if it is one. Unless they're just, you know.
I know what it's not an acronym for. I know why it's not an acronym. I should say, it's an interesting choice, isn't it? You know, in the current climate, but fair enough.
And Marnon, who's making a claim for the All Black squad, he's playing really well again. But you're right. Let's get on to next week's games.
Okay. So first up. Massive game. These are all, well, they're all derbies. So first up, Zebre Treviso at Zebre.
Conor O'Shea, the Italian rugby union are going to have a word and say, Zebre, roll over. We want a team in the Champions Cup.
If Zebre don't roll over, everyone in that squad is going to wake up with a Zebre's head next to them. So, yes, they better roll over.
Zebre, who have conceded 615 points across 20 games, they will be losing.
And if Treviso win, playoff time, baby.
They can guarantee it, can't they?
Yep, it's in their hands.
So if they win, a 5-point win takes it away from either Edinburgh or Scarlets.
Have that.
Wow.
That would be big.
Wow.
Meanwhile, guaranteed win for Scarlets, who go to Dragons.
Ugh.
It's 5 points for them. Kings Cheaters in a game that nobody cares about.
Local derby.
Yep, Ulster versus Leinster. Does this mean anything for you, Phil?
It doesn't. So Ulster.
They're both already in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Next, Cardiff versus Ospreys. This does mean something to somebody, apparently. Ospreys can get to the playoffs still, can't they?
Can they?
No, they can get to the playoff. They can get to the seventh place playoff for a Champions Cup spot.
Correct. They can't get into the top three.
Right. Glasgow, Edinburgh.
And the same is true. And the same is true of Cardiff. So that that game is significant.
Hmm. Yeah. Winner finishes fourth in that group in Conference A.
Right, so. Glasgow, Edinburgh. This is actually fairly important. Edinburgh needs to win this. And Edinburgh...
And Glasgow will want to buy him top spot, won't they?
They will. So Glasgow can be overtaken by Munster. So Glasgow need more than 2 points out of this.
And Edinburgh need the win to get into the playoffs. Otherwise
they're going to be... They're probably going to miss out on the playoffs, and they're probably going to miss out on the playoff for a Champions Cup spot. They could probably Edinburgh could well end up fifth.
Yeah.
In the pool. All the good work as well.
But Edinburgh have got a good record against Glasgow.
Great record. Really good record. I mean, as much as I want Edinburgh to do well... I really want them to lose because I want Treviso to go through.
And Munster host Connacht, which doesn't mean anything to Connacht because they're safe in third. But Munster, if Glasgow fail to win or fail to get a 4-try draw, then Munster can overtake them. So that is important for Munster, but not so much for Connacht.
Right, interesting.
Right.
Very interesting.
Interesting times.
Yeah. Now, for some reason, I must be 1 week ahead on the schedule because I've got Bristol and Sale. But actually, it's Sale versus Bath on Friday night. Some real rugby now. Are you working this one, Tim?
I am, yeah.
I am as well.
I'll see you there.
See you there. Tough game, this. Very tough game. Sale have pretty much... had the better of Bath every time they've been up to the AJ Bell of late. I think Bath are very, very good on their day, but they are a bit dysfunctional. Sale are very, very good on their day. They are a bit dysfunctional. Coin toss.
How much physically and mentally will the travel to La Rochelle and back, and the game, the physicality of the game, having your best front row getting beaten up by Antonio and Prizo.
Yeah, it's bad that. Yeah, it's. I'm not going to say it won't affect them. It clearly will. And like I said before, they are a team which do not get beaten up. They just don't. I've never seen that happen before. That said, hopefully they'll want to bounce back. But they're on their, they're on a bit of a bad run now. They had a really good win at home against Leicester. They've lost against Worcester. They've lost against La Rochelle. I hope they can bounce back.
Because they could actually slide into ninth place if they don't win this.
Which is bad.
But they could yet get into fourth if they win their remaining games.
And other results go their way. It's
the same as last season. They were on the cusp of getting fourth, and then it all unravelled. And maybe this is the downside to having a smaller squad. This is the time when you suffer.
Especially if you're playing European semi-finals.
Yeah. So I think
at home, Sale will edge it.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you.
Sale just. Newcastle, Northampton?
If Newcastle don't win this,
it's
not mathematically impossible, but it's over.
Northampton are a good team. Northampton are probably my favourites for fourth.
Interesting.
Because I just think that they play a great brand of rugby. They can score against anyone. They're getting better every time they step on the field.
As I keep saying, I think their pack's a bit flaky.
Mm.
Flaky is the wrong word. Yeah, flaky is the wrong word.
The other week.
They've just not. Their set piece isn't quite right.
I think they win this. And I think they concede some points, but I think they get a bonus point. I think they get 5 points out of this.
Northampton do.
Yeah, I could well see them ending up in fourth.
So the plastic pitch suits them.
I'm going to go for Newcastle on this one.
Newcastle have to.
It
was a must-win game 2 weeks ago against Leicester, but this is another one.
But that's why I think they lose, because...
Yeah, those must-win games, they've not been...
They played that card.
Yeah.
If they won that, Newcastle win this, but they didn't, so...
You're right. Give me Northampton.
Exeter Harlequins. Exeter for me.
Exeter, yeah. Definitely.
Leicester Bristol.
Now, if there's one team... Well, there's lots of teams, but one team in these close games that's suited to exploit Leicester's backline defensive weaknesses... It's Bristol.
Yeah.
Bristol will... They'll have analysed it. They'll be running everything from everywhere. They'll find the holes and they will exploit it. So I think unless Mike Ford has given a serious shake-up to that backline defence already, I think Bristol are going to win this.
I think Leicester are going to come good. I think they've had a couple of extra weeks with Mike Ford, who is I always think of him as an attacking guru, but actually he came into this... this rugby union world as a defence coach.
Yep.
So he knows a thing or two about that as well. Bloody good coach. I think his impact is felt immediately. If they've handed him the reins, Leicester should come out and be a much better team. And they've got good players. That's the thing which we keep on forgetting.
Leicester. They've got some very good players. They've also got some filler.
Let's not talk about those ones. And they've had a week off. Give me Leicester.
Tim?
I think Leicester at home.
Okay. Then we got Wasps Saracens. So is this a double header on Saturday? Both on BT Sport.
Yeah.
Very good.
Nice. Saracens.
Saracens, I think, will rest a load of players, and Wasps have started to come good.
Yeah, they'll lose this.
Give me Wasps.
Give me Saris.
I've got a funny feeling about Wasps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna go for Wasps. They beat Exeter at Exeter.
Well, here's a shout for you. Sunday, Worcester win.
Interesting.
Against
Gloucester.
Gloucester. So Gloucester are pretty much secure for third spot. Not mathematically, but pretty much. So it'd be interesting to see what they do. Worcester, they still need at least one more win. Yeah. No, I can't. That Gloucester pack is just too big.
It is.
With simply pulling the strings in the Gloucester pack, give me Gloucester.
I'm going Gloucester.
Give me Worcester. I have a feeling.
Interesting.
So if all this comes to fruition, it looks like Newcastle are down and Northampton finished the week in fourth place.
There you go.
Tantalising.
One final thing before we finish up. Unless you two have got any other business.
I do have some other business.
Okay, go on.
Very, very quickly. You might know that some of our bravest and best are playing rugby, and as I understand it, there are still tickets available for Air Force versus Army. I think that's in Kingsholm, actually. So
I haven't been able to be in the studio for the last couple of weeks, but I've been sent a Navy jersey as well, which
lovely.
We just need Phil to get an Army jersey, and we could do a Forces Forces Pod special.
Who is your link? Who is your link in the Navy, Tim?
Well, when I'm wearing it and when I'm on screen, I will reveal my sources.
Interesting.
Well, if you
one of our listeners who just wanted to balance things up a bit.
Well, on that note, if you have an army jersey that you want to give to me, size medium, you can slide into our DMs at Rugby Podcast and let us know.
Yeah, that way we can actually support a branch of the forces each.
Which someone else did. So Frankie Barker on Twitter slid into our DMs, hashtag sliding, hashtag lurking, to say, relating to our discussion a couple of weeks ago about how Tigers got their name.
Yes.
He said his uncle was a former mayor of Wigston, who's 90 years young, Duncan Lucas, and he said there's a family back in the 1920s by the name of Crunkhorn with sons who played for Leicester, and when the Leicestershire regiment returned from India, they brought a magnificent tiger skin with them, which hung pride of place on the wall of the clubhouse.
I knew it was something to do with hunting tigers.
So, if you want to slide into our DMs, just like Frankie, at Rugby Podcast.
Yeah, so
I like that idea of us each adopting one of the forces as our team for future forces matchups as well.
Yeah, that's a great shout.
Yeah.
So anyway, my RAF will be playing Phil's Army at Kingsholm next Saturday. Also, RAF women have never beaten the Army, but could be on for inter-service champs if they do.
Come on, the Army.
And, RAF men just need to stay in the race, really. So there you go.
Wonderful.
Oh, and if you don't believe that Forces Rugby is any fun, can I just guide you somewhere? Can I guide you to YouTube and have a look at French Marines playing English Marines?
Oh, God.
That's such a great fight.
At the end of it.
Oh, my God.
But that's not what it's about.
You don't see fights in rugby anymore. You don't see fights in rugby anymore, except in services games.
Yes. So have a look at that. Well yes, have a look at that. You can find us on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast, Tim, at Cockett, me, at Jay Beardmore, and Phil will find you.
always.
We're also on YouTube and on Facebook if you want to, go and have a chat, join in the conversation. But until then, from me, Phil, and Tim, let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.